Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast. I'm Alison Perry, and you're listening to episode 40. Today's guest on the podcast is Emma Cantrell, mum of two, and someone who does brilliant things both in her day job and her spare time. Emma is Chief Executive of Support for Sick Newborns and Their Parents at the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford, a charity which provides emotional and practical support to parents, provides life-saving equipment for the neonatal care unit, and funds research to improve the lives of babies in the hospital's NCU. As if that wasn't enough, in her spare time, Emma runs First Days, a charity which provides equipment and clothing for families living in poverty. On the podcast, we chat about the work she does, what drove her to set up First Days, but we also talk about how it influences Emma's family life and how she raises her own children. Emma talks about the conversations that she has with her children, how she makes them aware of their own privilege and why the world is the way it is. So if you've been thinking about how to appropriately discuss issues like poverty, inequality, homelessness, politics, and the issues in the world around us with your own children, then Emma has some really great thoughts. So I'm here with Emma. Hello, Emma.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what family life, what motherhood means to you.
A little bit about myself. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm 32. I live in Wokingham in Berkshire. I've always lived in Berkshire, apart from when I was at uni in London. So always in the southeast. I had my first child, Joni, when I was 24. And my second, a year and a half later, Wilbur. So I felt like I was quite a young mum, although not in the context of my family, because they had babies in their teens. That's like right. The thing. So my mum and grandmother. So, yeah, I felt quite old compared to them. But looking back now, I feel like I was just a baby myself. I am divorced. Got divorced 3 years ago, I think. And we co-parent in the absolute purest sense of the word. The kids are 50-50 with us each. We live around the corner from each other. All decisions are mutual. We've split tasks in a way that I think married couples would be quite envious of. Like, he deals with all birthday parties, RSVPs, gifts, everything.
You are kidding.
No, and he actually likes taking them to the birthday parties.
That's the dream.
Yeah. So, you know, and I buy the school uniforms or whatever. But all the costs are split. I wouldn't ever refer to myself as a single mum, because I just do not feel like I'm doing it on my own.
You make it sound really appealing. I think I might get divorced just so I can outsource parties.
Yeah, literally, it is. And it's great because we don't argue about anything because we don't live with each other. So actually, it works really well at the moment. It could get complicated. If the kids, when they're teenagers, want to live in one place because that's where the PlayStation is or something, then that could cause some problems. But, well, who knows?
We'll deal with that later
when we come to it.
So your kids are 7 and 5, is that correct? And do you feel like it's quite a nice place to be, having a 7 and a 5 year old?
I've been told this is the golden age of parenting, because they are still like in love with you. They still think you're the best thing that's ever happened in the whole world, but they're like self-sufficient. So like Wilbur doesn't sleep. He's never slept well. I mean, for the first, I reckon it was 3 years of his life, he woke up every 45 minutes to an hour, and he would be like, at best he would just be talking to himself, and at worst he would just be screaming. Oh. It was like, yeah, relentless. So he now still gets up, if it's 5 o'clock you're lucky, it's normally between 4 and 5, but he now can come into the living room, play with Lego and make his own breakfast. So
yeah,
I mean he comes and annoys me a bit. Look at this Lego, I've spilt Cocoa Pops on the floor, whatever. But he, you know, generally he also eats like a lot of food in the morning, so I have to be careful of what's like in reaching distance,
what's available.
Yeah, but so that's like great. So I do feel like women are really, this summer's been fantastic, because I mean I took them to this paddling pool nearby and I just sat there and read a book and they played, which was just,
that's one of those moments that you maybe 4 years ago probably couldn't even imagine would be a reality.
No, and I probably wouldn't have taken them because I'd have been so scared of them drowning, like, you know, or me having to just be that exhausted, screamy mum. Yeah, it would have. So, yeah, it is. I feel like I'm in like the good zone before teenage.
Before the
starts.
Hormones hit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm kind of terrified about that, because I've got a friend whose little girl who's 7, about to turn 8. Has already started showing kind of signs of slight hormonal changes and shifts. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, that is just around the corner.
Yeah.
You know, just things like them maybe starting to have to wash more and wear deodorant and, you know, like little sort of pimples and spots sort of showing on their faces and things.
It's too young.
I know.
It does make me think, though, like the passage of time, you know, people tell you when you have a baby, and it used to drive me absolutely, it used to make me really cross when people would say, oh, it goes so fast.
Oh, that really, really drives me mad.
You'd be like, savor what? Savor being covered in vomit and not sleeping, no thanks. But actually, you know, I think my daughter's 7, which means that in the same amount of time she'll be 14.
Yeah.
And that's a bit terrifying.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like I've been doing this for 7 years. I still feel clueless.
It does go really quickly, but I would still like to say that those people who do stop you in the street and say, cherish every moment, or it goes so fast, I would still quite like to punch them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's so easy to look back with rose-tinted glasses.
Exactly.
And forget about the sleepless nights and the anxiety and the relentless feeling of it all.
Definitely. And actually, you only need one night where your child vomits all over their bed or wets the bed or something to take you straight back and, you know, remind you to never say that to anyone ever again.
Never, never say that. Okay, so as well as being a mum of two, your day job is the CEO of a charity, isn't it, that supports families on a hospital. Is it a NICU? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, so people call them autism. So that's a real American term.
Is it? Okay.
But, I mean, people call them, it's called the Newborn Care Unit in
the
John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford. So the charity supports parents, funds equipment on the unit. It's a massive kind of 50-something bed cot unit. So that's my kind of job that pays the bills. And I do enjoy it. It's like, it's a good job. And it's a real, it was a really different thing to anything I've ever done before. I worked in kind of drug and alcohol rehab and homelessness and kind of social problems and child poverty. And then this job is obviously very different. And I did, for the first, I reckon, 6 weeks at least, I just cried all the way home every day, because it was just heartbreaking seeing families going through, you know, even if their baby wasn't, you know, desperately ill, just having to be in a hospital when you thought you would be at home.
Even having worked for charities in the past, you still felt like this affected you in a different way.
Yes, definitely. However, I don't think there would be any point working for a charity if you didn't feel emotionally engaged at all times with the people who you're helping. I think if you lose that, then go and get a different job.
That's interesting, though, because I would have thought you would have had to have almost hardened yourself to it.
I think you I don't think you harden yourself. I think you learn things. When I worked in drug rehab, my job was going, a part of my job was going and auditing the services. And that involved talking to the people who were using the service. And when you talk to someone in rehab, they want to tell you their whole life story. So you get, you know, and it's fascinating. I just found it absolutely fascinating. But you quickly learn what was true and what wasn't, and what was part of their story that was serving where they were now, and which bits they were probably missing out. And, you know, I remember I was very shocked one time. I spent a whole day. They had this amazing project where they got all the people in the rehab out into the countryside in the Yorkshire Dales, and they were building dry stone walls and all this stuff, and all these people who had never left a city, and it was amazing. I spent all day talking to this guy, and then just at the end, he dropped into conversation that he was looking to leave the rehab now, but he's, you know, has problems finding a house because he's got this specific conviction. And he mentioned the name of the conviction, and I knew that that meant either, well, it meant a very, very serious crime. And you think, wow, okay, that's something that you didn't disclose until the end of the day, yeah, you know, and it wouldn't, I'd like to think it wouldn't have changed how I interacted with him, but perhaps it would. But so you learn to probably be a bit more, not cynical, but wise.
Wary.
Yeah. About people and things. And you have to learn how to, put strong boundaries around your engagement. And the hardest thing, I think, is knowing that you can't always help people, you can't always fix things. There's only so much you can do, and that's really hard.
I guess it must be a little bit in that way, being a bit like being a doctor or a nurse.
Yeah,
and that everyone who comes through the doors, you can do your best, but you can't save everybody, you can't help everybody.
Exactly, and I think if you've lived in that space where you thought that you could help everybody and save everybody, or even wanted to, then you'd burn out so quickly. And then you should also go and get another job because it's too hard.
So as well as all of that, which, you know, just doesn't sound like much at all, to be honest, Emma, I think you're probably being quite lazy. You also run another charity in your spare time, don't you? First Days.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I started First Days 5 and a bit years ago. It was an idea I'd had. I worked in children's services in London, and I just knew that there were loads and loads of families who were really struggling. They didn't have a buggy, so it meant that they couldn't easily get their children down to the local park even, you know, couldn't leave their homes, or they didn't have clothes, they didn't have all this stuff. And I knew that there were lots of people who did have loads of stuff. You know, you hear of people all the time with a loft full of things from their baby's childhood and whatever. And then there was a bit of research done locally into single parents, and that came back as well, saying that there was these loads and loads of families who were getting loads of support emotionally and with other elements of their life, with housing and finance and things, but there was no practical help. So this was playing on my mind, and I was kind of kept thinking, it just needs a middleman, someone to get the stuff from the people who have it to the people who need it. And then that research came out when Wilbur was 10 weeks old. So Joni would have been about 22 months old. And I thought, oh, I'll write a little proposal. I'll apply for a grant.
I've got time on my hands.
Yes. Yeah, but who's going to give money to some random woman random 25-year-old, 26-year-old who has an idea? Like, come on. And anyway, they did. So I got this email like, congratulations, your funding has been approved. I was like, oh, now I have to do it. So I sat there with, you know, a cluster feeding baby who didn't sleep, and every night with a laptop, like building a website and trying to be writing all these governing documents, trying to work out, Googling, how do you start a charity? And, you know, literally, I didn't know. But I pressed go on the Facebook page and it just grew. Like, the local press were on it immediately. Mm. And then I just found myself driving around with this. I think Joni was going to her granny's house a couple of days a week, and I found myself driving around with this little 3-month-old baby, kind of going into meetings with these people who worked in the local authority and MPs and things with this baby, and then going and filling up my car with people's stuff and then dropping it off at people's. And it was just spiraled and grew and grew and grew. And then about 2 years later, we had enough money to employ our first member of staff. And that was great because I was at a point where I couldn't afford to work for the charity because I needed more money to pay my bills. Yeah, so I got to a point where I needed to go and get a job in another charity. I mean, another charity because that's my kind of where my strengths are.
Yeah.
So, and then we could employ someone. And then it had another step in growing. So yeah, 5 years later, we employ, I'm going to say 11 members of staff, have about 50 regular volunteers and help. I think I just counted in the last year, it was just over 1,600 families in the local area.
It's incredible.
And that goes from being things like if they need a sling or a buggy or a cot to needing everything for a new baby, school uniforms, winter coats, wellies, you know, you name it, anything for a child aged 0 to 8, but now actually up to 18 for school uniform.
Oh, wow, brilliant.
And yeah, it's just been huge, and it's amazing. It's, you know, and it's grown a lot bigger than me, thankfully, because you know, that would have been unsustainable
but
on
it's
my own.
Just incredible that you've taken that one idea and gradually built it and built it, and now yeah, it's helping so many people.
It is. It's quite. And actually, I get so emotional every time I go to the warehouse and offices, and I could, you know, if I don't kind of catch myself, I could burst into tears every time I go there, because it's just amazing. You know, the people who work there are incredible, the volunteers are amazing, and we get to help families at a point where, I mean, who wants to be in a position where they can't afford to give their children everything they need? It's just awful.
Yeah.
And to actually be able to help people at that moment is just fantastic.
That's amazing. So obviously, you know, with your day job and running First Days, you know, that must influence the way that you bring up your kids and the way that you parent and the conversations that you're having with them. How would you say that kind of influences everyday life for you?
I think we're really lucky that I feel like my children are fortunate to have this as part of their culture in how they're growing up. So it influences everything, because I often have to take them places and do things. So they want to know what we're doing and why. And it means that we can have really cool conversations about our privilege, about other people, about why the world is how it is. But I mean, I think just living it and living that example to them, I'm hoping will benefit them. I mean, maybe they'll both just become like corporate sellouts and, you know,
work in the city.
Yeah, work in the city and have this like do-gooding old mum somewhere over there.
Yeah.
No, it's well, I think it's really important. I think I'm hoping I'm raising, you know, conscientious kids who are aware of the world around them. I mean, I had a real moment. Joni was about 3, and she'd been given, I think it was her 3rd birthday, she'd been given new furniture for a doll's house. And I found this little carrier bag full of the old doll's house furniture in the porch. I said to her, and that's where people used to drop off stuff for First Days. I said to her, "What is this?" And she looked at me like I was crazy, you know, real like side eye, and kind of sighed and said, "It's for the other children, Mummy, because I've got new stuff now, so I don't need this stuff, so that can go into their doll's house." Yeah. And I was like, wow, okay, at 3, you know, she's got such an understanding. And that's not because I've, you know, that actually wasn't because I'd spent a lot of time trying to explain inequality to a 3-year-old. It's because she had just
picked it up.
And also, you know, I try and talk to them honestly, appropriately, but really honestly about why I'm doing what I'm doing, or anything, actually. You know, where do babies come from? Well, I'm not going to tell them it's the stork. I'm not going to scare them. But, you know, I think it's important just to be really honest. We've got a lot more stuff than other people have got. Therefore, we should help them.
So how do you strike that balance then between being honest and not scaring them? Because I think a lot of people, you know, are probably guilty of wrapping their kids in cotton wool to a certain extent, and you know, the whole stork thing obviously is one example, but also, you know, if they might see things about like terror attacks happening, you know, if they're at primary school, older kids might mention things to them. You know, how do you kind of keep them informed but not scare the living daylights out of them so they're having nightmares? And
I think the most scary thing for children is worry and uncertainty. So if they hear things, which they will, because we have a 24-hour news cycle, as adults, people discuss things all the time, which they can overhear. As you say, at school, they might hear something. Kids turn facts into crazy, crazy, you know, rumours. So I think actually the most scary thing for children is anxiety and not knowing and hearing things and snippets of things. So actually, I think you can be, you can talk to them in language they understand and be really honest about things without scaring them. So, I mean, my kids heard on the radio about the Manchester bombing, and obviously there were lots of children, and, you know, Joni picked up that there were children who had been killed, and I could see in her face that that was quite a scary thing. So we talked about why someone would do that, you know, and we at a way that she could understand. And then we talked about the likelihood of it happening, which, whilst it's horrendous, is unlikely to happen, you know, very often. And we talked about then what we can do to be, you know, better people in the world. How can we, what can we do in our actions, in our life, that can make the world a better place? So, you know, trying to make things positive and keep them thinking in a positive way rather than being scared. But actually, I think their imagination could be the scariest place to be without facts.
That's so true.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And what about politics? Because there's been, I've seen a few people recently being criticised for talking so openly to young children about their political views. And I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, my parents were very much like, we're not telling you who we vote for. It was very much shrouded in secrecy, which now feels quite old-fashioned. And I know that, you know, I, for example, take my seven-year-old along to the polling station because her school's usually shut that day. And I've probably had to explain to her at least four times what I'm doing because she doesn't quite retain the information. But I'm aware that I probably don't talk to her enough about politics and who these people are. She knows who Donald Trump is. She knows what my opinion is of Donald Trump. I probably don't need to tell you what my opinion is. But yeah, how do you strike that balance there?
It's, I think there's a couple of things. Firstly, if you are in a position where you get to choose whether you talk to your children about politics, then that's a really privileged position to be in. So If you are in a position where you have the option to wrap your child in cotton wool and they need never know that some people are homeless and some people can't afford shoes and, you know, some people have a parent in prison and all of these things, then that is a fantastic position to be in. And actually with that privilege comes a huge responsibility to make your children aware of what's going on. So I think firstly, there's that. But secondly, I think it's so important. You know, everything is political and children need to understand the context of the world around them. I was the same. My parents, I mean, my dad still won't tell me who he votes for. I think that's now because he knows how upset I would be.
Oh, no, don't say that.
Yeah, but I know. But we don't, we don't really talk about politics. But actually, I think now with social media, with the 24-hour news cycle, with people talking more openly, you know, it's not a big secret anymore amongst our generation to be discussing who you vote for and why and what you believe about things. Children need to know. My number one rule with my kids is that we talk about policies and not people. So a great example was we were in the car and I was listening to Radio 4 and I was getting really cross, and there was, I can't remember what it was, but it was something, and I just said, I think I probably said something like, you know, something angry, like, oh, for goodness sake, you know, why can't they, blah, 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 blah. And Wilbur pipes up in the back, we hate Theresa May. And then Joni said, she should be killed. And I was like, right. And I genuinely pulled over the car and stopped. And I was like, right, okay. Here's the thing. Theresa May and the government have done things that I am not happy about, that I don't like, and I think are bad, and they're causing awful things to happen to other people. And I think they have done very bad things, but they're not bad people, and we don't want them to die. And we don't actually want anyone to die. So I had to really dial it back. And I thought, well, that kind of vitriol has come from me. There's no one else they've got that from. You know, there's no one else in our lives who talks this passionately about politics as much as possible. So I had to really check myself and be like, right, they've interpreted my anger as we need to cause people harm. So what I am really keen on is talking about policies and not people. So we can say, right, you know, the introduction of universal credit has caused people to be pushed further into poverty and put more people in poverty. It means a heavier reliance on food banks, less likely to get housing, etc., etc., etc. That is bad, and it's caused people harm. And the people in government who have allowed that to happen have done a bad thing. But I genuinely believe they're not bad people. And that is one of my values, you know, that people can do bad things and they're not bad people. That's very controversial, I know. But I worked in rehabilitation. I've seen people have their lives turn around, you know. So I think policies, not people, is the absolute, my golden rule with my kids.
That's really, really clever, because you can understand how your kids would, they're very simplistic in their view, and they're, you know, they watch cartoons where there's a goodie and a baddie.
Yeah.
And that's how they kind of view the world. And
exactly.
So if mum is talking about, you know, how frustrated and angry she is with something that she's listening to on the news, then automatically they translate that into, oh, that's Theresa May, she's the baddie.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's really clever of you to kind of try and get that distinction.
But I think that's how we should, I think that's how, you know, if you read any parenting book, that's how they say you should, you know, you don't ever say your child, you are naughty, that you've done a naughty thing, or you've done a, you know, I think you can translate that to how you speak to them about the world around them as well. Definitely. Yeah.
Do you think that they seem to be more aware of social problems than other kids their age? Do you ever hear them talking about poverty or helping, you know, people in need or charities to their friends? Do you think that they're almost like spreading the word?
Yeah, I did. I was actually told by Joni's teacher that she'd been taking these books, the Little People Big Dreams books, into school, and I know she'd been taking them in, and she'd been like reading them out and then having a little discussion with her friends about, you know, why it was important, and you know, what she thought about this person. And I think probably they are more socially aware, but you know, people get into their parents' interests, don't they? And I studied social policy at university. All my jobs have been in social justice, and you know, it's what I'm interested in. I will happily, you know, sit and read books and watch documentaries all day every day if I could. It's just, you know, in the same way that other people are interested in fashion and travel and all those other hugely legitimate interests, it's just something I'm like interested in.
Yeah.
So you do get into your parents' interests. I mean, their dad is obsessed with sport. So Wilbur is now beginning to become obsessed with football. And well, yeah, okay, he's taken on one of his dad's interests. So that happens.
Yeah.
So I think they do. I mean, Joni especially, I think it's just in her character. I mean, my mum's a midwife and told Joni exactly how babies are born when she was about 4, and she went into nursery and told everyone. And I got texts from the mums like, so my daughter now knows exactly how babies are born. It's like, oh my goodness.
But you were doing them a favour, because it meant that they didn't have to explain it and exactly. Have that awkward conversation.
Yeah, exactly. It's a public service.
Yeah. You mentioned those books.
Yes.
And the other day in a conversation, you mentioned a politics
yes,
kids
it's this
book.
One. I have it right here. Let me just... and it's cheap. It's like $4.99 on Amazon. Usborne Politics for Beginners, and one of my friends actually bought it for herself to read, because after I showed it on stories, she messaged saying, I've just bought this for myself. But it is great. It just tells in very simplistic terms what things are, and at the end there's like a page of there's a few questions, you know, why is there war, why are some people poor, what is prison, what's it for, that kind of thing, what is terrorism, am I a feminist, there's all these things. And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah,
as an introduction.
Really,
yeah, I've bought it for most children I know.
So you'd recommend this anyone listening who perhaps yeah. wants a bit of a route into having conversations with their kids about politics and the world? That's quite a good way of doing it.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Earlier on, you mentioned the conversations that you have with your children about privilege. How much do you discuss that with them? Like, how often do you think, how aware really are they that they are incredibly lucky to be, you know, living a comfortable life with a roof over their head and, you know, food on the table?
It's interesting because I've obviously spoken to them both the same amount. Joni is a lot more aware than Wilbur. I think that's just in their character. She's a lot more aware of other people's emotions and what's going on around her than he is. He's very aware of like Lego and food. So, yeah. I don't know. But she certainly... But I also make them check themselves all the time. So... this week we swapped cars with my brother. I've got a bigger car so he can drive to holiday. And they got into his car and they're like, oh, it's a bit small, isn't it? And they were a bit whingy. And I said, right, doesn't that show you how lucky we are to drive around in our car for the rest of the year? This is 1 week. Sort yourself out. You know, it's so I do try and pull them up as much as possible. But what that actually takes... And what that has taken is me checking myself all the time, because there's always things that we get wrong that we haven't fully worked on in ourselves and in our. And I do think having these conversations with children about the world around them, about politics, about privilege, about all these social issues and inequalities, you can't really do that with any legitimacy unless you've done the work on yourself first. So I think actually questioning what you've got, how you've got it, why, and where you are in the world is the first place before you start trying to talk to your kids about it.
Why do you think that's important? Because I have to say that I reckon it's probably a few years ago now that through conversations with you, I first started becoming really aware of my privilege. And, you know, I'm ashamed to say I remember a conversation we had where you were talking about... privilege, and I was like, but I'm where I am because I've worked hard, Emma. And you were like, do you remember the conversation?
Yeah.
And I was like, but you know, I've worked hard, and I'm, you know, I'm talented, and that's that's what. And you were like, the thing is, Alison, you know, you went to university, and you know, like trying to point out gently where actually I might have been helped along the way.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I think it's really, really important. So I was brought up in Windsor, which is privileged to the, you know, extreme. It is a beautiful, beautiful, lovely town. I personally would not like to live there now with my children because it is so, so showy, offy, white, middle class.
Not your scene.
No, it's just not my people. But my dad worked in Slough, and I remember once my little brother was being especially spoilt, and my dad drove him to visit a friend of his who lived in this estate in Slough, and just basically sat him down as a 14-year-old, you know, teenager who didn't care, and just said, look around you, you know, try and understand what we have. So actually, you know, I was brought up by parents, especially my dad, who was, you know, constantly getting me to check my privilege, constantly, and also to really own it. Like, yeah, I'm incredibly lucky. You know, I went the daughter of a midwife and a policeman who got lucky in the housing boom of the early 90s, but I went to a fairly decent state school. I went to a very good university, which I would not have got into without the privilege I have, you know. And I think acknowledging that everything isn't your own hard work. We were brought up in a time in an education system where we were told if you work hard enough, you can have whatever you want.
Yeah.
I don't think children are told that anymore, but we were certainly told that. So actually, when you do achieve things, you do want to be proud of yourself, and it's absolutely fine to have pride in your achievements. That's not a, you know, I was running this morning, and I ran the furthest I've ever ran. And I, at the end of it, I was like, I am so proud of myself. And that isn't to say I don't understand that just being able to run is a privilege. You know, I get that, but I am proud of myself.
Yeah.
And you have to find that balance all the time. And, you know, you don't want to put children off working hard at school and that kind of thing. But I think it's about finding that balance and just constantly checking yourself and being aware that it's luck. I mean, Tim Minchin absolutely summed it up in the graduation speech he did that's like had millions and millions of views. And I go back to that all the time, where he basically says, you know, you've done really well to get here to graduate. And those of you who were from good homes and everything else, you know, thank you to your parents and well done. And those of you who had a crap upbringing and everything, you were born with a brain that's got you here. You didn't do that. And, you know, you just think you didn't create that brain. Your brain was given to you.
That's
and actually,
so true.
If you can get back to that, then coming from that place of kind of humility, you know, that is where everything should start from. But that's not to say you shouldn't be proud, and you are talented. It's just...
Thanks. I'm glad you got that in there, Emma, because I was waiting for that. Yeah. No, I think it's a really important conversation to have, and I wish that everyone could have a conversation with you where you make them realise that, because it was a real kind of moment for me where I was like, oh, yeah, okay, actually, yeah.
It's just one of those things. It's uncomfortable though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like anything that challenges your opinions. But, you know, all of our opinions should be challenged all the time. That's the...
And I guess there's no point in walking around feeling, you know, consumed by privilege guilt either.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And actually, it's, you know, I feel very privileged. I know I'm very lucky. I still live in a rented house, and I'll probably never be able to afford my own home, and I still count my pennies, and I still, you know, get to the end of the month and think, thank goodness payday's coming. But all of those things are privileged.
Yeah.
And that's not to say I you know, there aren't struggles, but actually I feel a big weight of responsibility that with my privilege I've got to do something. I've got to do the work for people who aren't as privileged as I am. And actually, you know, in whatever way that is, whatever guise that takes, you know, guilt is not a way to channel that, this kind of enlightened, wow, yes, I've realised I'm privileged, feeling bad about it.
It's quite a self-indulgent thing, isn't it? Guilt.
Absolutely. So actually channeling it, you know, turning that into something positive,
yeah,
has got to be the best. And that's what I say to my children all the time. If they moan because at the weekend we go to first days and do a bit of work, my answer is, we're lucky to be doing this, and we're lucky that later I'm, you know, taking you to the cinema or something really fancy. Like, you know, we're lucky to be here.
So I guess it's like
an honor.
Acknowledging your privilege, refusing to feel guilty about it, but instead of doing that, actively deciding on things that you can do. So even even at, you know, the bare minimum, if that is setting up a new direct debit every month,
absolutely,
you know, and donating to your local food bank,
completely. And actually, do you know what, that's not even the bare minimum. That is great. Those are great things to do, you know. And I go on about this a lot, but find a local small charity that needs your support and give them a bit of, if you can't give them your time, give them a fiver a month. That means the world to, you know, to small organisations.
I guess the big charities must get a lot of people automatically going to them because, you know, you have people coming around your front door asking you to set up direct debits and stopping you on the streets, and they're the ones with the TV adverts.
Yeah, yeah.
So but I guess it must be the small charities that actually...
I doubt there's anyone in it. I get notifications every time someone makes a donation to either one of the two charities, and every time it makes me smile. So, you know, I doubt there's someone sitting in, you know, cancer research who has that same feeling. Not that, you know, cancer research obviously very important,
very, very worthwhile.
Yes. But, you know, it's exactly the same as choosing to buy your meat from your butcher rather than the big supermarket. You know, it's a consumer choice, and that's fine, but these are all little things that we can do with our privileged existence that can help.
Brilliant. Okay, Emma, I have got some quick fire questions for you, because I ask everybody quick fire questions on the podcast. Are you ready?
Yes.
Good. Right, so your charity is called First Days. What's the first thing that you do every day?
Oh, it's awful, but I just check my phone every day, just go through all of the social media channels. Yeah. And then I make a cup of coffee, and all I hear from everything I ever listen to or read is that you should not check your phone first thing in the morning.
We all do it, though,
but
don't we?
I do. I'll be honest. Yep.
Yeah. Bad. Mm. I'm the same. What's the last thing that you watched or listened to and immediately told someone else that they had to get involved?
I listened to a podcast episode. There's this I've got really into reading about people who do ultra marathons and like these crazy sporting things. There's this American guy called Rich Roll, and he has this podcast, and he interviewed this guy called John McAvoy, who was a criminal, like super criminal. He was serving two life sentences in jail, and he turned his life around. He's not in jail anymore. He got released on probation, so he'll be on probation for the rest of his life. He broke like two rowing world records in jail, obviously on a rowing machine.
Yeah,
they don't have jails in with rivers, I don't think. And he like turned his life around. The story is sensational. It's like a 2-hour long podcast episode, but it's worth every minute. And I told everyone I know to listen to it.
Amazing. It's very niche, but yeah,
it's really
good.
Niche, but it's a story about, you know, turning your life around and criminals, and it's all up my alley.
Love it. And what's been your most embarrassing parenting moment?
Oh gosh, okay, most embarrassing. I feel like there's so many. I don't even know. Like Wilbur is quite Wilbur was a really loud and dramatic baby and child, and he still is. So I've had loads of the, like, him just lying on the floor in the supermarket and absolutely will not get up. And, I'll tell you what the worst thing was, and this makes him look terrible, but he was about two, perhaps younger than two, 18 months or something. And this guy took pity on us in the supermarket and was helping me. I was holding Wilbur under one arm. Joni was probably running off playing with knives or something. And this guy was helping us unload the shopping. And I turned round to him to say thank you, and Wilbur just punched him. And thankfully he was like, I have three sons, like, I understand what's happening here. He was lovely. And I guess, you know, an understanding person was going to be the one helping me with my shopping.
Yeah.
But I honestly, if I don't know what shade of puce I turned, but it actually just made my stomach turn retelling that story.
That's horrible. Oh. You know, it's been a real embarrassing moment when retelling it just makes you...
I feel like
you...
I'm going red talking about it.
Don't worry, we can't see. So, you know, it's a podcast, so good. Emma, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh,
it has been
you.
Really lovely to chat to you. Mm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
thank you to you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope it's given you a bit of food for thought. As always, please hop over to iTunes, where you can rate and review and subscribe to the podcast, and I'll catch up with you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.